Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity. I'm Justin.
And I'm Dreek.
How are you doing, Dreek?
How am I doing? I'm definitely doing.
I love to hear it.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm doing it.
That's good. Okay. Oh, sorry.
How are you doing, Justin?
I'm doing really well. I'm a few minutes late tonight. I had to run down and get my laundry. The laundry shed is actually in the healing garden here at the farm, so I have to walk down to the garden and took a little spliff with me. So I'm here. I'm high, and I'm ready to get started. Are you drinking anything?
Am I drinking?
Are you drinking anything tonight, Jake?
I am drinking some fruit Moscato.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Peach flavored. No, strawberry flavored. Oh. I put the peach one in the freezer and it froze.
Stunning.
I mean, it wasn't supposed to. I thought alcohol didn't freeze, but like, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Listeners, if you know anything about that, you can email us.
Because I'm pretty sure like vodka or tequila doesn't freeze.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I thought putting it in the freezer would be fine.
You know, I've never heard of...
It wasn't fine.
I mean, I can't say that I'm a professional, but I've never heard of anybody putting wine in the freezer. I imagine, you know, now that you say that, so like pure alcohol wouldn't freeze, but most alcohol that doesn't have a lot of alcohol, like ethyl alcohol in it, is mostly like water and fruit juices, right? So like fruit juice and water will freeze, but the alcohol won't.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is definitely more water and fruit juice than alcohol.
Wine. Wine is lovely.
Absolutely.
Well, I am having some sweet tea tonight with some bourbon. Right now, it's a bit more bourbon than sweet tea. But...
Oh, I forgot to do one thing. And that was tell you about my case.
Oh, what are we covering? I'm so excited.
Okay. I'm really nervous because for me, this was a big one, I felt like. But we are doing Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh my God. I'm so, so excited to hear this. No way. Jeek, no way.
That's why I'm really nervous because, like, I really wanted this to be good.
Because this is like a legendary, legendary case.
Yeah, it's like legendary, big case.
Yeah. But you're going to do great. I believe in you.
At least one of us does. Okay, so let's just jump right into it.
All right, let's do it.
So we're first going to start off with Bonnie. So Bonnie was born Bonnie Elizabeth Parker on October 1st, 1910, in Rowena, Texas. She was the second of three children. Her father, Charles Robert Parker, was a bricklayer who died when Bonnie was only 4 years old. So her widowed mother, Emma, moved her family back to her parents' home in Cement City, which is an industrial suburb in West Dallas, where she worked as a seamstress. Mm. Seamstress.
Interesting.
So growing up, everyone said that Bonnie was an honor roll student in high school, and she excelled in creative writing, which is something I did not know about Bonnie from Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, very fascinating.
Is that she was actually very, very well, really good writer. Yeah. And she was also really good at dancing and singing. So she was a creative person.
Yeah, creative, very creative, very artistic.
Artsy person. Mm-hmm. She actually won a county league contest in literary arts for the Cement City School and even gave introductory speeches for local politicians while she was growing up.
Okay, Bonnie. Damn.
Imagine what politicians let her speak for them, like give them introductions.
Oh man, I bet their careers just soared when she got famous.
Absolutely. Skyrocketed. So as a teen, she was obsessed with motion pictures and the big screen in general. In her second year in high school, Parker met someone named Roy Thornton, Now, he is basically just described as a petty thief. And in my notes I put, she absolutely had a thing for bad boys.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like her first real venture into like dating and, you know, and she's very young and she's already starting off on a horrible path. Like, why do you want to date a bad boy? I mean, to each his own. Anyway.
It's exciting.
So the couple ended up dropping out of school and they got married on September 25th, 1926, 6 days before her 16th birthday. So she was only 15 when she married him.
Ah, wow. Interesting. That's pretty young.
Which is, I'm like, very young, actually. Too young, in my opinion. Anyway. But Roy was 18 years old. She ended up getting a tattoo of Roy's name on the inside of her thigh. If that's not love, I don't know what is.
Aww.
She got it tatted on her.
Forever.
And actually, we're going to get a little bit more into this, but they actually never divorced.
Oh. First love is forever.
Yes, but as we all know that, Bonnie and Clyde do end up dying.
Bonnie what?
Technically was never unmarried from Roy.
You said they ended up dying?
Bonnie and Clyde, yes.
Why? When did they die?
We'll get right into that right after I tell you that she never seen him after January 1929.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So after being married for 2.5 years.
200 is a long time.
She'd never seen him again. The last time she'd seen him was in January in 1929. They got married in September of 1926. That's not even 2 years.
Wow.
It's more than 2 years. It's not even 3 years.
His name was Roy. Is that what you said? Yes. So Bonnie marries Roy, the bad boy, and they're only married for 2.5 years. They never divorce, but then they just never see each other again for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And the reason why they had split up is because Roy was abusive and he was unfaithful.
Bad boys. So poor Bonnie. What you gonna do?
So after their marriage, quote unquote, ended, Parker moved back in with her mother and worked as a waitress at a Dallas cafe called Margot's Cafe. Roy ended up going to prison for 5.5 years after he separated from Bonnie. So he has no aspirations to do anything. But then again, let me just put this in. This was during the Great Depression.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't like... I don't know a lot about the Great Depression, but it doesn't seem like it.
Sounds depressing. I could see do you know what he went to jail for? Do you think, I mean, he was probably stealing, if I had to guess, or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's ever, after like researching a little bit about him, it just seemed like he was a thief. He would just steal things. I didn't see that he hurt anyone, but it just says that he was a petty thief.
Not the kind of bad boy for Bonnie, am I right?
And so in 1932, while working at Marco's Cafe, she ended up meeting a man named Ted Hinton. He was one of the regulars that came in. Now I want you to remember that name, Ted Hinton, because it's going to come back up.
Teddy.
In 1932, he joined the Dallas County Sheriff's Department. So he had went from being, I think he was a postal worker, and he ended up joining the Dallas County Sheriff's Department. And Parker briefly kept a diary of early 1929 when she was 18, and she wrote a lot about her loneliness, her impatience with the life in Dallas, and her love of photography.
Oh, okay.
So we can see that she has this diary, and she writes a lot, and she uses it very much. And she talks about her love for photography and how she just wants to leave Dallas and how she just feels so alone.
It's so interesting. That's such like
Well, so far, Bonnie's going through it.
yeah, for real, but it's such a trope to me. Like sh sad she
It
cuz
is a
because she has
trope.
such an artistic mind, and you know, most often it seems like art blossoms from loneliness and strife, and she's obviously had a lot of that. And then of course there she is making these what's it called? Unhealthy attachment styles, you know. Yeah, she's going through it.
I feel like she could have been so much more. She could have been like this movie star, or she could have been like a legend. I feel like she could have done something in the arts rather than be with Bad Boys. I don't know.
Totally,
To each his own.
totally. So full of potential.
And so that is the background on Bonnie. Now, Clyde. Clyde was born Clyde Chestnut Barrow on March 24th, 1909, in Ellis County, Texas, near Tellico, just south of Dallas. And he was born to Henry and Cumie Barrow.
Okay.
He was the fifth child out of seven or eight. I've seen both.
Oh wow.
So he was like down the
It's
line.
the Great Depression. More hands make the work go.
But more hands, that's more mouths to feed. Why would you want more kids during the Great
Oh,
Depression?
I didn't think about that.
Who's sitting there popping out babies during the Great Depression? Like, why are you?
Maybe they had a farm. Maybe they were. No, never mind. We went to. This was in Texas. I'm sure there's farms in Texas, but.
Absolutely. So his family was really, really poor, and he came from a really poor farming family. His father ended up getting a job, and the family eventually moved to Dallas to a place called the Devil's Back Porch.
Oh.
First of all, I'm not moving to anywhere that's called the Devil's Back Porch, but I guess they didn't like have an option because they were poor. So for the first few months in Dallas, his family actually had to sleep under their wagon until they had enough money to rent a tent.
That's rough.
And I think they did that for a couple of months. Like they slept under the wagon.
Slept under the wagon.
But if you have like seven or eight kids, and then you two, that's a big wagon.
Oh my God, you're right. I mean, they probably what didn't all like ride in the wagon. They probably walked by it, right? And then they slept underneath it.
Justin, I don't know what the hell they did, but I'm not sleeping under a wagon. Give
Imagine
me that tent.
if it like one of the wheels or the axle broke in the middle of the night. I would never sleep, never.
Welcome to Paranormal Cracktivity,
Welcome to
folks.
Paranormal Activity.
So from a young age, Clyde was fascinated with the Wild West, and he was fascinated with people like Jesse James and Cole Younger. And he also hated living the life that he was living, which was living in poverty. And at the age of 16, he dropped out of school and he decided to work some low-end jobs to try to support himself. So he's trying to find money so that way he could get things that he needs, like the bare necessities. Because we're still in the Great Depression
Bare
and he's just trying to
necessities.
scrape.
The simple bare necessities.
So at the age of 17 in 1926, Clyde had his first arrest. And the mugshot from this, I'm sorry, Clyde Barrow was a cutie.
Oh, okay. Let me see this.
Clyde Barrow was a cutie. He was gorgeous, I think. Anyway, he was re arrested because he had failed to return a rental car back on time. And when the police came to confront him about it, he just ran. So his second arrest happened when his brother Buck had stolen good. So his second arrest happened when he and his brother Buck decided to steal some turkeys.
Why did they
So
steal the
Buck is his
turkeys
older
for?
brother. Justin, I guess they just needed to eat that bad.
They just needed to eat the turkeys that bad.
They just need.
What is with people stealing?
I would have stolen a fucking cow.
Yeah, people stealing animals all the time. I mean, people were stealing horses, and now they've got what, pigs, and what's next? Peacocks? Come on.
Squirrels.
Those are free. If you're fast enough.
So between 1927 and 1929, he was able to learn how to crack safes, and he stole from small stores, and he also stole some automobiles.
Okay, thrifty.
Thrifty nifty. In November of 1929, Clyde, Buck, and an accomplice broke into an auto shop in the town of Denton, just south of Dallas. And local law enforcement ended up running into the boys and opened fire on the three of them.
Oh, no.
They shot and caught Buck, but Clyde escaped, and he made it all the way back home.
Oh, all right.
I don't know what happened to the third accomplice, but if Buck got shot, I mean. So, we're now going to talk about when Bonnie and Clyde first meet.
Aww.
So, they met on January 5th, 1930, at 105 Herbert Street in West Dallas at a mutual friend's house by the name of Clarence Clay. Bonnie was only 19 years old and Clyde was 20. Clyde just so happened to be stopping by, and Bonnie was already there in the kitchen. When they met, they instantly fell in love.
Aww.
Which I'm like, does that happen? Like, when you meet someone, like, and you just think, like, I'm just in love with this person?
Couldn't tell ya. Never happened to me.
How do you know, like, when you look at someone for the first time, and you're just like, I'm just going to spend the rest of my life with you.
That sounds more like infatuation to me.
That sounds like infatuation to me.
But you're like exactly I said, right. Who am I to say?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so by this time, Clyde had already served time because of the safe cracking and the auto thefts. And in April 1930, 3 months after his faithful meeting with Bonnie, cops showed up at Bonnie's door while Clyde was there because they had an arrest warrant out for him.
Uh-oh.
And he was sent to the county jail in Waco, Texas. Waco, Texas. He had no intentions of serving his entire sentence.
Way out in Waco.
And so what happened is that Bonnie would continuously go to the jail and she would visit. And then on one of these visits, he slipped her a note.
Hmm.
And he explained how he wanted to escape prison. He was able to talk Bonnie into sneaking a gun into the prison under her dress. On the next time she came to visit him, and he was able to break out with two other inmates.
Wow.
So Bonnie, like, sat there. She was like, I'm ride or die for this dude.
Ride or die. Very resourceful.
Ride or die. And this was the first time she actually broke the law.
Oh, okay, Bonnie. All for Clyde. I have to think about, like, when you say, like, she hid it underneath her dress, you know, like, she probably had, this was in, like, 1930s or 40s, she probably had, like, a garter or something, and she, like, slipped it in the garter, and then she had, like, one of those, like, seven-layer dresses, you know what I'm talking about? am I totally off?
I do not think this was the Victorian era, Justin. I think you're talking about, like, the Victorian era.
How else would she slip it in, though? I mean, what was she wearing? Was it just, like, I guess nobody's going to check up a woman's dress, but maybe it was just, like, a long, like,
absolutely.
A dress. I don't know.
And, like, you'll see a lot in this case where Bonnie is not looked at as being a serious suspect because people sit there and they're actually thinking that a woman like Bonnie, who's smart, intelligent, beautiful and a very genuine, loving, and sincere person, they don't think that she's capable of doing the things that we later find out that she does with Clyde.
Interesting.
So no one thinks she's able, like, capable of doing this because basically she's a woman.
Mm.
But after breaking out, he was caught 7 days later.
Oh, wow.
So after that little stunt, Clyde was slapped with a 14-year prison sentence.
Mm.
And he was imprisoned at Eastham State Penitentiary. The prison was not a prison made to rehabilitate its inmates. It was meant to break them. And while there, one of the inmates by the name of Ed Crowder decided to make Clyde, quote-unquote, his own.
Oh.
And for months on end, trigger warning. And while there, for months on end, Clyde was being raped by this man.
Oh, no.
Trigger warning.
That's really bad.
Ed was over 6 feet tall, and he was 200 pounds. And he was over 200 pounds. And Clyde was actually my build. He's like my exact build. He was 5'7", and he was 120 pounds.
Oh, man. Mm.
Could you imagine me just like being like this... like this bad guy.
Imagine you being a bad guy. Yeah, I think I could imagine that, Dre.
Wrong answer. Wrong answer.
Depends.
So obviously we see that Clyde, who's the short guy, he's probably not all that strong. He's 120 pounds. He's 5'7".
Mm.
Ed is 6 feet tall and 200 pounds, and he's taking advantage of Clyde.
Yeah, that's really,
and his youth.
Oof, that's really rough.
And on October 29th, Clyde decided that he wanted to try to end the abuse, and he knew that no one in the prison would take him seriously if he brought this to someone, and he also didn't want to be seen as being weak.
Mm.
He's in this position where he's around all these criminals, and he doesn't want to go to, I don't know, I guess he doesn't want to go to the guards and be like, hey, I'm being treated this way by a certain inmate. He wants to try to handle the situation by himself. And on October 29th, 1931, he decided to try to end the abuse by sneaking in a piece of galvanized pipe to the prison.
Oh.
He did this, and what he did was he smacked Ed in the head after he lured him into the bathroom.
Oh, man. Wow.
So he smacked and hit Ed, and he killed him.
Just like that. Damn.
Just like that. That was the first time Clyde Barrow ever killed anyone.
Wow.
Was in jail.
Hmm.
So what happened is that another inmate who was already serving a life sentence in the prison decided to take the blame for Clyde.
Oh, no way. Why? Do we know?
I don't know why. I don't know why. Maybe because, like,
he was being abused. I mean, maybe he had friends. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, you just have this kid who's, I don't know, how old was he in 1931? He was 22 years old.
Mm, man.
You literally have your whole life ahead of you.
Yeah.
So I guess he was like, okay, I'm already in here for life. What else can they do to me that's not already being done to me?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, murder is never right, but I can't say I blame him for hitting him in the head with a piece of wood.
That's a discussion we're going to have. I think murder is right sometimes.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's not murder if you're defending yourself, in my opinion.
Yes.
In my humble onion.
It's not murder. It's not murder if you're defending yourself. Yeah. Absolutely. So while still in prison, homeboy went crazy.
Mm-hmm. Naturally.
And he knew that he did not want to stay in this prison anymore because they were making him work outside for long hours, and he would have like a 5-minute break to eat stale bread and drink some water, and they would put him right back to work on the chain gang, like, ooh, in the hot Texas sun.
Wow. Dang.
So Clyde was like, I am not doing this anymore. So he actually had another inmate take an axe and cut off two of his toes.
No. Stop. What?
Yes. No. Yes. He had another inmate. We don't know if he wanted this inmate to do it on purpose or if he just so happened to get slashed in the foot with an axe by another man.
Wow.
And so that little stunt ended up putting him in the infirmary.
Uh-huh.
And this was great to him because he didn't have to do any work. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't have two toes, but I also don't have to work, so I'm good. This was really bad timing because he was immediately notified, like when he first got into the infirmary, that his mother had actually gone to the governor to get him pardoned. So he would have been leaving jail in 6 days.
Oh, wow. Dang.
6 days after he chopped off his toes, he would have been getting out anyway.
Wow. That's so unfortunate. He really had a rough time in jail.
And so for the rest of his life, he walked with a limp because of those two toes being chopped off.
No way. A limp?
Yes way. And so once he left prison that time, he began an era of more and more crime. Together, Bonnie and Clyde, they began working together on bank robberies and other small robberies and thefts. And on one case, Bonnie was captured by the police, but Clyde was able to escape. Escape. Is it escape or escape?
Escape. Escape.
Escape.
Escape.
So after Bonnie had got caught, she was put in jail in Kaufman, Texas, and that's where she sat until her trial began. While she was in her jail cell, she actually wrote a poem, and it goes a little something like this. If he had returned to me sometime, though he ain't have a penny to give, I'd forget all this hell that he caused me and love him as long as I live. But there is no chance of his ever coming, for he and his maul have no fears. But that I will die in this prison, or that I will flatten this 50 years.
Oh, man. That's so touching.
Sis can write.
Wow, yeah.
She did not need Clyde. I'm gonna say it.
I mean, he was her muse.
Next topic. So the jury set her free because they thought that there was no way that a woman would be able to commit a crime that they say that she committed. She's a woman. She didn't do it. Let her go. Mm-hmm. That's basically how her trial went. And after her release, her and Clyde set off with other revolving members in a group that called themselves the Barrel Gang.
Ah.
They went to over 24 states and they robbed gas stations, banks, and grocery stores. They made many trips and they stole a lot of money and cars. Now, Clyde was a huge fan of cars. He loved cars. And at this time, Ford had just came out with the Ford V8.
Mm.
And at that time, it was like one of the fastest vehicles in the world.
Oh.
I think it could go like 80 to 90 miles per hour, while like regular cars during that time could only go top 35.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
And so his favorite car was the Ford V8 because it was fast and cops wouldn't be able to catch him in his crimes. Because if he's going 90 miles per fucking hour and you're going 35, there's going to be a point where you just can't get him anymore.
Yeah, right.
And legend has it that it in one bank robbery, it only took Clyde 3 turns to get the police off of his trail.
Wow.
He turned a corner. He only turned 3 corners, and they couldn't catch him.
It seems like if you were a police department and a car like that came out, the very first thing you would want to do is like get the fastest car available, right?
But like, you have to think, this is like the 1920s. People are literally dumb.
Oh, but it's also the 1930s, so they're also broke. They're dumb and broke.
Dumb and fucking broke. In America. Imagine. Imagine.
That sounds like my life.
So from April... Yeah. Oh, so now I'm going to talk about his favorite gun. His favorite gun to use was a Browning automatic rifle.
Nice.
With army-grade bullets.
Cool. Manly shit, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So from April 1932 to January 1933, the Barrow Gang had killed at least 3 men. These men included Eugene Moores. He was an undersheriff in Springtown, Oklahoma.
Aww.
He was killed at a community dance. I don't know why he was killed, but he was killed.
Oh, that's so sad.
And you have Doyle Johnson, who was shot in front of his family on Christmas Day. He was shot because he was trying to prevent Clyde from stealing his car.
Oh, no. That's so much worse.
And then Malcolm Davis.
Oh, my God.
Malcolm Davis was a Fort Worth police officer. He was shot at point blank range. This meant Clyde would automatically face the electric chair at this point because Davis was a man of the law. And if you killed a man of the law, you were automatically sent to the electric chair.
Oh, wow. That escalated so quickly.
Absolutely. It did escalate really quickly. And he said that the killings made him sick to his stomach. He told his sister that he did not like killing and that it made him sick to his stomach. He said it was just a way to get out of the situation. The other men had guns and they were going to shoot him. And he didn't want to be shot, so he shot first.
Interesting. He was very determined.
So he said all he was trying to do was just get away. And that those men were going to they were going to shoot him. And so he said that basically, it was self-defense.
Huh.
I was just trying to steal their property. They were trying to kill me. I was trying to steal their property.
Interesting.
In a way, I get it. In a way, I don't. I get it, but I don't like it. I see where he's going. I can see it. He was like, I wasn't trying to kill them. I was just trying to take their property. They were trying to kill me, and I just ended up killing them first.
You can't excuse your ambition, right? Like, he was determined to steal this property, and he wasn't going to let anybody stop him, right? Even if that meant killing them, which means that's not, like, above his moral standing, you know? So him saying that he doesn't enjoy it doesn't make it any less of a bad thing. Like...
I agree. I just can see that, like, I can see how it makes sense to him. I can 100% see why it makes sense to him.
I guess.
Makes sense to him.
I guess so. I don't know.
Because he's like...
But then, no.
Because he was like, I wasn't trying to kill them. I was just trying to take the property. They were trying to kill me.
I don't think so.
I defended myself.
3 different times. And then he shot somebody, like, point blank. There's no way. I don't think so. I don't like it. I don't trust him.
I don't trust Clyde either.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1933, the Barrow Gang was making news headlines with their robberies and murders. And if they got caught, he knew that he would immediately get the electric chair. So they were able to make their way back to their homes and to their families, and to stay with them for a little bit. Clyde knew the phones would be tapped, so he would write a message on a piece of paper, put it inside the Coke bottle, and then throw the Coke bottle from the car. And when his mother, Cumie, would find it, she would gather up close family members, and they would cook on the nights that Clyde would go on the run and stay with them.
Oh, he's so resourceful. I don't understand why he needs to steal things. Maybe he...
I don't know how I would feel if my, like, one of my, I don't know, cousins was on the run from the law, and my mother was like, okay, your cousin is coming home. We need to, like, have all the family here, and we need to eat and celebrate him. I'm turning him into the cops.
Huh. That really makes me...
Why are you on the run?
That really makes me think, because the whole family must have just really been going through it, you know? They must have just really been that poor. Yes. That, like... whatever he gave them, even if it wasn't much, was enough for them to be like, hell yeah, brother, keep doing what you're doing.
Because I do think that he was going out committing these robberies and then giving money to his family. I know that's what Bonnie was doing.
Yeah.
When she would come home.
It seems like it based on that information.
And in the spring of 1933, they had added some new members to the Barrow Gang. Buck, his older brother that we talked about, was out on parole, and his wife, Blanche, both ended up joining the gang that year in the spring of 1933, the Barrow Gang. And the Barrow Gang had made their way to Joplin, Missouri, and they stayed in an apartment to lay low. The problem was that a lot of bootleggers stayed in the area, and so cops were always there. I don't know if they knew this or not, but Joplin, Missouri was a bootleg city, and the cops were already always there trying to crack down on people who had alcohol. $500 worth of moonshine.
$500 worth of moonshine. That sounds like a good time.
It does not, actually. So like I said, I don't know if they thought that, if they knew that the police were really heavy in that area. And on April 13th, 1933, the cops decided to investigate their hideout because they had gotten a tip from someone in the area that there may have been bootleggers in the hideout that they were in.
Narc.
So they got the cops called on them because people thought that they were bootleggers, when in actuality, they were on the run because Clyde had killed three men.
Oh, if only they knew. The whole situation could have been avoided.
So here's the thing. Since they only thought that there were just bootleggers in there, they only came with pistols. But Bonnie and Clyde and the Barrow Gang... stay strapped.
Strapped. Mm-hmm.
They had automatic rifles, shotguns, and pistols.
Mm.
So they were not only able to outrun them because Clyde had that .40 V8, they were also able to outshoot the police because the police only had pistols and they were carrying automatic rifles with army-grade bullets. John Herman was a farmer and a part-time peace officer, and he was helping the police at the time of the investigation into the bootlegging at the Barrow Hideout. He approached the hideout with Joplin police, and they were only armed with pistols, like I just said, and the Barrow Gang just lit the place on fire. They just started shooting.
Oh, wow.
The Joplin PD tried to park in front of the garage so that way they couldn't get out. But instead, they were just met with the gunfire, and Herman was shot and killed, and he died on the scene. So this is the second police officer that Clyde and the Barrow Gang has killed.
Right.
He's getting his ass sent to the electric chair.
If he gets caught.
If he gets caught, this is just... So now he has more of a reason to be on the run.
Right.
Because he said he's not going back to jail. He had that in his mind from, like, the beginning. He's never going back to jail. And I hate to spoil it, he does not go back to jail.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't want to
he
either.
Not go back to jail.
After that experience that he had.
Another policeman, Harry McGinnis, was shot so much that his arm was nearly decapitated.
Oh, wow.
So at the same scene in Joplin, Missouri. So he's killed two police officers at this scene. So that brings it up to three.
Wow.
He didn't automatically die, but he died before sunrise on April 14th, the very next day. They were able to get away, but they left the vast majority of their things at the apartment hideout that they were at. Bonnie had left a lot of personal items at the scene. The thing that they found most interesting was that there were some rolls of undeveloped photos. In the photos, there contained some of the most famous pictures that we now have of Bonnie and Clyde. The most famous photo is Bonnie holding Clyde at gunpoint with a rifle. Like, they're posing. Which I'm like, go off.
Go off.
Like, she's posing. And I think Clyde has, like, his hands up or something. But it's just, like, she's posing. She has the gun to his belly. And, like, acting like she's going to shoot him. And, like, they took a picture of that.
Aw, they're just having a good time.
And there's also one badass photo of Bonnie with one leg on the car. She has a gun in her other hand. And she has a cigar in her mouth.
Oh, Bonnie.
She just looks like a boss chick.
Hell yeah.
So 2 days after this whole incident, on April 15th, the photos were plastered all over the Joplin City newspaper, looking for these people. After leaving Joplin, they stayed on the run, but they soon became tired, as one does when you're on the run.
Yeah.
In early June of 1933, they were driving. And Clyde did not notice that there was a detour in the road that they were on. He ended up swerving off the road.
Oh, man.
The car rolls over and catches fire. Clyde was thrown from the car. And Bonnie was badly burned on the right leg with battery acid.
Oh, man.
She had also been stuck in the burning car after it rolled over. Clyde had been thrown from the car.
Where is he? He needs to come and help her.
So a nearby family helps them, and they were able to save Bonnie's leg by pouring baking soda and grease on it, which I've never heard.
Oh my gosh, never heard of that either. All these people are so resourceful.
After that, she was considered crippled.
Oh.
And when people arrived at the scene, Clyde got into a cop. And he kidnapped two officers. And he set them free 50 miles down the road. They then headed east to meet his brother Buck in Oklahoma.
Okay.
On July 20th, 1933, officers cornered the gang in a motel in Missouri. After a shootout, the gang managed to escape again. But this time, Buck was shot in the head, and his wife had shards of glass in her head.
Oof.
4 days later, they made it to Iowa, and the gang was again surrounded by cops in a field. They really couldn't run because of Bonnie's injury and Buck's gunshot wound. But they stopped because Buck said he could no longer continue. I guess he was just in too much pain.
He was shot in the head.
And, like, he was trying to run, and he was just like, I literally can't do this.
Yeah.
And so his wife stayed back with him. And Bonnie had to be carried by Clyde the hallway because she couldn't run. And he's missing two toes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why are y'all doing this?
Damn.
I know why, because he knows he's going to be put in the electric chair.
No, he just doesn't want to go back and experience prison again, I think.
Yeah. So Buck and Blanche were captured while Bonnie and Clyde made an escape. Blanche ended up going to prison, but Buck ended up dying a few days later.
Mm.
They stayed on the road, and on January 16th, 1934, Bonnie and Clyde did a raid on Eastham State Prison. They freed 5 inmates. This was the same prison that he went to in 1931. The head of the prison system, Lee Simmons, was on a mission to catch Bonnie and Clyde. He hired Frank Hamer, who was a former Texas Ranger, and he had already killed 53 men.
Wow.
And he spent half of his life catching bad guys and crimes. And I'm going to insert a quote by said former Texas Ranger, Frank Hamer. "The way to enforce the law is with a 45 slug in the gut."
Wow.
He's like, if you don't follow the law, I will shoot you. I will shoot you if you break the law.
Damn straight.
That's the only way I know how to do it. That's the only way I know how to enforce the law.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to shoot you in your stomach. So Hamer just didn't want to catch Bonnie and Clyde. He wanted to execute them on the spot. Like, he didn't want there to be a trial or anything.
Wow.
This man had killed, I think, what was it, 3 police officers? He killed 3 police officers. And he's like, when I see Clyde Barrow, no trial, I'm the judge and the jury, I'm going to kill you.
Wow.
One of the men that Benny and Clyde broke out of jail to be their gang member was Henry Methman. And his family had made a deal in order to get him clemency. The deal was that they were willing to give up Bonnie and Clyde to Hamer. But not long after, Henry and Clyde were said to have killed 2 more police officers. So now he has 5 police officers' blood on his hand. Clyde is said to have told Henry that he wanted to take the police officers. Henry interpreted that as kill. But like we can tell from like previous instances, Clyde most likely meant that he wanted to kidnap police officers.
Well, wait. Why?
Because the only thing that Clyde said to Henry was, let's take these officers.
Well, but he's like killed so many already. So why do you think he wants, or why do they think that he wanted to just take them?
Because he was able to, because we have that. He already says he doesn't like killing. And when he did take those other police officers, he dropped them 50 miles up the road.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so I guess Henry wasn't thinking deep enough.
Right.
And when Clyde said, let's take them, Henry thought he meant take them out.
Right. He was gunning. He was cruising for a bruising.
Cruising for a bruising. On May 6th, Bonnie and Clyde had another secret meeting with their family. This would be the last time either one of them would see their family. During this meeting, his mother told him that she hadn't bought a headstone for Buck yet because she knew that he was going to die soon, and she wanted to save money by burying them together and having them share a headstone because the family was that low on money.
Aww.
Imagine telling your son, looking him in the eyes and saying, I know you're going to die. That's why I haven't bought your brother's headstone yet. Oh. And the reason why I haven't bought the headstone is because I'm not able to afford 2 headstones. And so you're going to have to share one with your brother.
Wow, that's so sad. What did they do with all the money? Oof. Did he not give? He must have not stolen enough for him. She should.
This was the Great Depression.
She should have been like, you need to go steal a headstone.
Justin.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
That was so mean.
I know.
Okay. Anyway. Why did he just steal a headstone?
You need to steal one for the whole family.
The whole family just shares one headstone. Just like a fucking block of granite. He told his mother that he knew he was going to die soon too. He told his mother that he wanted these words inscribed into him and his brother's headstone. Gone, but not forgotten.
Okay.
Which I'm like, okay. Bonnie ended up giving her mother a poem that she had been working on called The End of the Line. This is during the same time. And this is some of the poem. The poem is 16 stanzas, but I'm just going to read one of the stanzas.
Mm-hmm.
Someday they'll go down together and they'll bury them side by side. To few, it'll be grief. To the law, a relief. But it's death for Bonnie and Clyde. That is the poem that she had been working on. She gave that poem to her mother.
Hmm. Foreboding.
I'm like, whoa. Like, Bonnie's mother did not want her to be with Clyde at all.
Hmm.
And she consistently asked Bonnie to leave Clyde because she knew Clyde wasn't good for her. And now she's on the run with this man.
Mm.
That's some heavy shit.
And she's willing to give her life. She knows she's going to lose it. She's ready for that.
So by midday, they made their way to Louisiana, where Henry Methman's parents live. He had planned to meet Henry and his parents at their house on May 23rd, 1934 at 9 a.m. Haman knew that they were going there because of the deal that he had made with Henry's family a while back. So Hamer was able to gather up a posse of lawmen, and one of the men that was a part of that posse was Ted Hinton. The man that was a regular at Bonnie's first job.
Teddy.
And they had some other sheriff deputies with him. This time they had automatic firearms. And they hid in a bush off the side of Highway 154 and waited for Bonnie and Clyde. This highway was the only road that led to Henry Methman's parents' house. So they knew they had to take this road.
Right.
So right here is where I found a couple of different things and a couple of different sources. It's said that the police officers made Henry Methman's father sit outside of his car on the side of the road, on the highway that led to his house, so that way Clyde would slow down.
Oh, what?
But some other people say that Henry Methman's father actually did break down, and it just so happened that Clyde ended up slowing down. Either way, Clyde and Bonnie had to slow down.
Uh-huh.
Because remember, they're driving that Ford V8. It's really, really fast.
Right.
They can outrun the law. So either way, they had to slow down because they seen Henry Methman's father on the side of the road.
Sorry. He crashed his car. Did he get a new one?
Justin, he's stealing cars.
Oh, so he just like goes for the Fords. Anytime he can, like, he just gets cars all the time anytime he wants, I guess.
Yeah, they have, I think it's 1926, I mean, like 1920s, early 30s. They had like two types of cars, Matt. Three. You had three. You didn't have
now there's
many options.
There were two, and now there's three, and he's only looking for one. I guess. Okay.
For the 33%.
Now I get it. he's just taking them anytime he wants to. He's like, I like that car, anytime. I'm going to grab it. Okay, I got you.
Absolutely. So this car that they were driving in was stolen, and it was another Ford V8. Mm-hmm. Either way, he was driving and he slowed down. We don't know whether or not if the police told Henry's father to act like he was broken down or if he actually was broken down. But Clyde slowed down, and the police officers that were in the bush immediately started firing at the vehicle.
Oh, man.
And Clyde was, they knew they had hit Clyde because he had took his foot off the clutch and the car rolled into a ditch.
Oh.
So they knew they had at least hit Clyde because Clyde, they knew Clyde was the one driving.
Mm.
They shot the car over 150 times.
Whoa. No. Whoa.
At 9:15, they were officially pronounced dead by police officers. Ted Hinton was the one that pulled them out of the car, and he said that they felt like nothing but just wet rags. They were dead.
Oh no.
They were just wet rags. That's how much blood had shed.
Yeah, that's so awful. Oh, man.
And it was later revealed that the shot that killed Clyde Barrow was the first shot to his head. So the very first shot that someone shot, that was the shot that killed Clyde Barrow.
Wow.
And it was a shot to the head. Whoever that officer is, I'm not messing with him.
Right.
So their bodies were taken back to Dallas, and for their funerals, over 10,000 people showed up to see the corpses of Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow.
Whoa.
They requested to be buried together, but they were buried in different family plots because Bonnie's mother did not want her daughter laid next to Clyde.
Wow.
And, funny enough, Parker was still wearing Roy's wedding ring when she died.
Oh, interesting.
Because technically she never divorced him.
Right. Wow.
So she was still wearing her wedding ring.
Roy.
Roy was told this, and he commented saying, quote, "I'm glad they jumped out like they did. It's much better than being caught." End quote.
Aww.
He was sentenced to 5 years for robbery in 1933, and after attempting several prison breaks from other facilities, he ended up dying at Huntsville State Prison on October 3rd, 1937.
Hmm.
So he didn't die soon. He died soon after them. Clyde was only 25 and Bonnie was only 23 years old.
Wow.
So that's like us. I can't imagine dying right now.
I mean,
that's a different topic. Next.
Yeah. I mean, next. I'm only 22, I can't get into this. But yeah, I can't imagine.
And after their deaths, Clyde's mother was sent to prison for 1 month. Because of the role that she played. Because, I'm so sorry.
She stole a turkey.
No. She was sent to prison because of the role that she played in helping a felon evade capture.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, they would come back all the time. And she would gather all the family together.
And just make them food.
And they would have have a family gathering with this outlaw that she knows is an outlaw.
Okay. I don't...
So they sent her to prison for,
I don't,
for 1 month.
I don't agree with that, but I don't agree with a lot of things, so I'll just let you finish.
The car that they were in was, as we all know, probably stolen. Well, it was stolen. And the original owner was able to make money off of it by touring it around as the car that Bonnie and Clyde died in.
Oh.
And the car is currently at a casino in Las Vegas on display.
I thought you were going to say the car is currently cursed.
No, but the car is actually on display at a casino in, I think it's Las Vegas. Did I say Las Vegas?
Las Vegas.
It's in Las Vegas.
Oh.
The car is scary.
Well, I might just have to go see that.
I just have to go see that.
When are you coming out here?
Patreons, when am I going to
see you? You free over Thanksgiving?
We'll talk about Thanksgiving after we leave the podcast.
Oh, okay.
But that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh my gosh. Hats off to you, Drake. That was a really incredible story. I learned so much.
And I think there was also a 1967 movie made about the Bonnie and Clyde couple. And one of the members had actually lived long enough. One of the members of the Barrow Gang, I guess someone that they had broken out or something. One of the members lived long enough to watch the Bonnie and Clyde movie.
Oh. What did he have? Is there a review? Did he give his review? No.
I can't remember what he said, but I think he said something to the extent of, like, the movie made it seem like all shits and giggles.
The movie made it seem like all shits and giggles. That sounds about right. What was the movie called again?
He said it was like, I don't know, Bonnie and Clyde. Oh, okay. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of Bonnie and Clyde. It's a crazy one. I had a lot of fun researching this one.
Yeah, that was a really, really crazy story. I mean, it really felt like being in a different time, honestly, because there were these, like, shootouts and whatnot, and then so much sexism, and so much obstructions of justice, you know, like, first of all, going back to what you were talking about, the wet rags, I mean, that's just not right. Like, had they pulled up there, and like you said before, they knew that they were going to kill them, and they didn't care about justice. They were just going to kill them. And then they, like you said, both of them just had a very rough start. It's like natural-born killers, you know? I feel like they almost didn't even have a chance from the very beginning.
I would not have died for that man. I'm gonna just say that.
At least him. Right, right, right. Bonnie. Oh, yeah. Bonnie got caught up in Clyde, from my perception. Like, 100%. If it wasn't for him, he was the problem. He was the red flag.
He definitely was the problem. I'm saying it here and now. Clyde Barrow was the problem.
Let's see. Bonnie and Clyde, 1967, has 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, not too bad.
I think I actually watched it when I was younger. So a lot of this wasn't absolutely new, but the part where Bonnie was a poet, I didn't know she was actually a poet, and that she was actually in love with writing.
Wow.
Which I think is a very beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know any of that, but I learned pretty much everything. But it's really interesting that she was an artist. I also think it was weird that they sent her the mom to prison, because I feel like if you're going to hold her responsible for that, you have to hold everybody involved responsible, right?
And another thing, his mother was a liar as well.
Oh.
The way that she was able to get him out of jail the first time, she said that Clyde was the family provider, and that she was a widow.
Oh.
And that she needed a man at the house.
So she actively participated in this, I guess.
I mean, I wouldn't have gotten my son out of jail.
I would have.
And he's crazy enough to chop off his freaking toes?
Oh, yeah, I'm not missing one. Yeah, way. That was another. Oh, that's so crazy. So crazy. Wow, what a wild...
But that's all I have for this week, Justin.
What a wild ride. Live fast and die young. I guess that's it, crackheads.
I'm going to die old.
Oh.
Crackheads, yeah, I'm going to die old. Let us know. Comment on our Instagram. Do you want to die young or old?
Yeah, comment on our Instagram. We're going to post some pictures of Bonnie and Clyde and the likes. And we don't have any sponsors or advertisements, as you can tell. So feel free to go to our Patreon. If you like what we're doing here and you want to keep hearing it, then you should subscribe, because otherwise we can't keep making podcasts. So find our Patreon at patreon.com/paranormalcreativitypodcast.
Follow us on Instagram at paranormalcreativitypodcast.
Oh, I totally lied. It's paranormalcreativity. It's patreon.com/paranormalcreativity. Oh, so confusing. Anyways.
Do we have a Twitter? We don't have a Twitter now.
No, we don't have
Don't follow us on Twitter.
Don't follow us on Twitter.
But send us an email at paranormalcreativitypodcast@gmail.com. Was that right, Justin?
Paranormal Creativity Podcast. Yeah. That's right.
Perfect. That's it, crackheads. Don't do crack.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for listening. Please don't do crack. Please listen next time. And have a great week.